What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thanks everybody for taking the time to join us on today. And as always, a very special welcome to those of you that are joining us for the first time. And I'm going to sort of preface before I get into the topic today. And I've got a guest with me today, again, as we continue our topic, talking about the job landscape in UX, whether it's hiring or trying to find a job. I want to say this. I usually say it at the end. I'm saying it at the beginning of the day. It's time for truth to go viral. I've had a lot of conversations lately with people who are talking about these folks who are, they don't know anything about UX. They haven't been doing anything in UX for any length of time. And they are the loudest people on the internet, whether it's YouTube, whether it's LinkedIn, whatever, Twitter, they are the loudest people. But what they're sharing has little to no value. And then there are instances where I've heard some people say, well, you know, that person, what they're saying is really good. Yeah, but they're a troll. So to me, that person is a Trojan horse, because if you do embrace what they say, they've got something waiting on you that's going to hurt you. In the end, there was a guy recently, and my guest today, by the way, is Spencer Ivory, and he looked like he's biting his lip there, and he wants to laugh or something, not say anything. There was a guy recently, before we even dive into our content, I'll introduce him in a moment. I got to say this now. Somebody had a workshop, or a workshop, seminar, I don't know what it was, but the topic is what I remember, and the topic was embrace imposter syndrome so you can be a better leader. Then now that's already ludicrous. And for those of you who, people who listen to this podcast, if you go to uxuncensored.medium.com, I do an expose on imposter syndrome that shares a lot of things that people who embrace imposter syndrome don't know any of the facts that I shared. You're not even eligible for imposter syndrome unless you're actually good at what you do. If you just started, that means you're ineligible. So you don't come out the chute. You don't come out the womb claiming to have imposter syndrome, because you don't know anything yet. So you're not eligible. So, but anyway, go and look that up if you want to dive into that a bit. But after you go to this person's event or you just sign up, what's waiting for you on the other side is some type of a course or system that costs you $5,000. So the person is using old snake oil sales techniques from the 1800s, roping in people who are eager for a quote unquote cure. Then you come in, and then the next thing you know, he's running off with $5,000 of your money. And that person only has 5, 6, 7 years of quote unquote experience. And because they worked at a big name company, everybody just bows down and they pay obeisance to this person. They're all bowing and doing all these crazy things. They worship people because they went to a school with a big name. They worship people because they worked at a company with a big name. Folks, it doesn't mean anything. So it's time, that stuff went viral. It's time for truth to go viral. That's one of the things, a proposition that I'm putting out there for people today. I hear from people all the time how they love the content on this show. I hear from people talking about how this show has helped them to vault themselves forward in UX, to have realistic expectations about the discipline, to understand how to grow, to understand how to manage their careers, to have properly set expectations. This is the kind of stuff that needs to go viral. There is no snake oil sales here. We're not making any money off of you, not even trying. Those people are. All of those people are making money hand over fist, and it's backwards. It's backwards. So anyway, we started off our show with the end. So that's a first, but that's okay. So we're going to get into the content today now. Now, all the posers and the retrofits and the upstarts already turned us off. So good. So now just the people who mean business remain. So good. So because we don't care about them being here. I don't care about numbers. I don't care about vanity metrics. I care about helping people, right? We want people to grow. We want people to be successful. We don't want people drowning in toxic positivity. We want you to be a realist because that's what's going to stick to your ribs over time. So let's get into the topic at hand. Again, this is the third segment where we're going to be talking about the whole job landscape in UX, whether it's hiring, whether it is trying to find a job, how do you navigate? I even want to have some early career UX folks to talk about some of their journeys. So we're going to get some of them on here at one point in time during this series. But today I have with me someone who was just on recently, the person who exceeds me in the discipline of those who are of the BIPOC, of the BIPOC persuasion. Spencer Ivory, who was doing this work, usability work, going back into the 80s. I got in the 90s, but he was doing it in the 80s. And so I love that. I love people who bring something to the table. Unlike many new people today, when they encounter a new UX person, they want to kill you. They want to run you over with their car. They don't want to listen to anything you say. And no, we embrace people who bring something to the table. So I celebrate Spencer Ivory. Thank you for joining me on today, sir. And what initial words do you have for the folks before we get into our topics on today?
Well, you know, this is a tough act to follow you, Darren. I mean, you load it up so much that I feel like, wow, I mean, be careful when you drop in. But no, I appreciate you having me on because I think you're right. All the things that you say about opening up UX and understanding really what this career is and being a person of color is how do you get in and how do you get experience? How do you go from zero to some point in your career where you can step back and say, oh, I've accomplished something or I've arrived at a point where now I can step back and stop worrying about that knock on the door to say you're not good enough to do this work. Because, you know, as you're saying, Derek, you know, I got in it when, you know, there weren't many people of color in this business. And, you know, as I said before in your other podcast, I would go to conferences and it would just be maybe myself and two other people of color there that were there. But, you know, I've never, and this goes back to how I was raised as a kid. I never see people for the skin value. I see people if they respect me, I respect them, you know, and the reason why I call up why, you know, being the only, you know, one of the few minorities in these groups was because I just felt that maybe minorities didn't see this as a path of, shall we say, employment, or can they raise their family doing this type of work? You know, because at that time, today we don't have that many Black programmers, and you know, organizations are trying to figure out that diversity there. So there's a lot of diversity from the technical career side that have passed people of color by because either they felt they would be slighted, and they were, because I know I believe me, I was on the front runner of that stuff, and you knew when you were being slighted. The guy would just, you're not ready for this job. And you just look at the guy, you go, why you just say I'm not, you're not wide enough for the job? Let's be honest. But, you know, but see, those things, Those things would happen. It's real. Those things would happen, and I would look past them. Why? Because my father raised me, because he raised me in a way that, hey, these are the things that you're going to have to fight through. Mm-hmm. And on all those movies we see where the underdog, and in the case where they're black people or people of color being underdogs, that is true. And I hope you, if you don't know the plight of especially black people in America, you know, and then you hear these political revocations that, I don't know what that book, 1619, the woman's trying to tell the truth about what really happened, and they're trying to write that stuff out of history. And it's just, it's saddening, but it's true. Yeah. But anyway, so I don't want to digress and get it, because, you know, we live in a world where it's just a mess and things are going on. But here, if I bring it back and tie it back to the conversation of getting into this business and looking through those slights and continue to put my head down and to keep pounding and going forward. Yep. It's a tough road, but you can do it. You can do it. You just have to have that fortitude, and you have to believe in yourself. You really, and even when they say no, I never used to believe this, but when one door closed, definitely there's another door that opens up for you. As the individual, have to go find out. And it's something that I always preach to my daughter, who we had on a show earlier, but a while back, that I always encourage her to do the same thing. Don't take no as the final answer. And believe me, I've had no. I've been brought into jobs and only been there for a couple of weeks, and then I've been showing the door. So you just have to have a thick skin.
Yes.
And if you want it bad enough, you will get it. And so I'll leave it at that. I mean, absolutely. Because you loaded it up. There's a lot here, so
it is. We could easily go down that rabbit hole. I'm going to mention this, and then we'll get to our topic. But you just made me think about it. I was having a conversation with someone. We have a lot of conversations on LinkedIn from time to time. I'm glad that some people do decide to be civil and actually be social media, or be social, yeah. I should say, on social media. What a novel idea! I had mentioned something about people who are marginalized and how we're treated in the UX community. And then somebody came in and they were talking about something that happened to a friend of theirs. And they said, well, let's put the marginalization aside for a moment. I said, no, we're not going to do that. I said, that's why the problem continues, because people such as yourself that are not marginalized always want to set the marginalization aside. And when you set it aside, nobody ever deals with it. It doesn't impact you, so you don't care. I'm here to tell you and to run it down your throat if I have to. This is real. We have to, people like me have to deal with it all the time, such as what Spencer just said. You get shown the door just because you have what I like to call melaninitis. You know, so you got more melanin, and so that's a problem. For a lot of people, they don't look at the fact that you're qualified. They don't look at the fact that you know your stuff. They don't look at the fact that you have a long track record of success. They don't care anything about that. If they saw you on paper, they'd love you. If they never saw your face, they would love you. People have heard me speak, did not see my face, and did not know I was of African American descent.
Yes.
And then when they see me, then the jaw drops and you start getting all the reactions. And because you have conscious racism, deliberate racism, you also have unconscious racism. Some people are racist and don't even know it. It's so ingrained. And so, I couldn't try to avoid the rabbit hole. I've already stuck my foot in there a little bit, but people you can't ignore things and expect it to go away. And so I just kept mentioning it, and I kept mentioning it. And the person never did really, matter of fact, the person said something to the extent of, okay, well, at least we agree that something about this has to be done. So she was indirectly and passive aggressively saying that she didn't agree with what I was saying. How can you tell me that you don't agree with what's happening to me when it doesn't happen to you? So that's why that kind of stuff continues. And that's why it will continue to be a problem. And When I was a kid, I wanted to be like Martin Luther King Jr. And I was all over the I have a dream. And when I got older, fast forward, when I got older, so this one, maybe this segment is for the people of color that are listening to this podcast. And we'll get to the other stuff in a moment. Don't worry about it. But I learned that the dream, some people are not going to like this, but you do well to ignore the dream, was the mindset that I eventually arrived at. If one person has a dream, but you don't get up and do the work, the dream means nothing. So how about right. we just set the dream aside? I'm going to make myself qualified. I am going to work to be the absolute best professional that I can be. I have to ignore my own color in order to pursue success. No. And I have to don't go in thinking that I'm the black guy, because if you go in thinking you're a black guy, you end up with a chip on your shoulder. And then when something, right. you're waiting on something to happen. And then when something happens, you end up being reactionary. And that's not very emotionally, that's an EQ red flag, tapping into one of my old episodes. Yeah. So I have to ignore the fact that, and I'm not even 100% black. I am part Sioux. I am part Cherokee. I'm proud of that too. But so that's why I was glad to put BIPOC UXer since 1995. I'm proud of that. And just to stake my claim on it, but I also have to just say it because I know who I am, and then immediately dismiss it because it doesn't mean anything.
No,
it doesn't mean anything. So be excellent. Be excellent and ride that. I want to ride the wave of excellence. And then when somebody tells me no, that's one closed door, another one will open. And I say it all the time. Right. It's not about the 100 jobs you don't get. It's about the one that you do. That's our mode to transition into our topics right there. Topic number one. That one. Consider all that stuff bonus. Topic number one for today. We want to spend some time talking about, I know Spencer has a lot of insights to share on all three of these topics. So we want to milk him for what he's got on this. We want to talk for a little bit about interviewing and vetting candidates. And one of the reasons I'm bringing this topic up, on top of the fact that Spencer brought it up when we were in our warm-up phase for the show today, is that I've spent some time recently telling people how when you're in UX, especially for entry-level people, you're coming into an arena that revolves around empathy. And I know some people don't like the word empathy. I ignore that because I know what empathy means. And I love one of the famous authors who writes about Adele Lynn, my favorite EQ author, and I talk about this in my EQ series. She talked about empathy as being simply understanding someone else's perspectives. That's all it is. And then taking that into consideration as you work. And because I've heard people say that it's not possible to empathize. I empathize with people all the time. So I just throw that out. So it's understand someone's perspective. And when you understand somebody's perspective and take it to heart, you're empathizing. Now, why did I mention that? Because a lot of people are trying to find a job, and people I've been telling this to have been embracing it. You need to be empathetic even when you're trying to find a job. You need to empathize with the hiring manager. You need to empathize with the recruiter. As much as you might not like some recruiters, and a lot of recruiters give other ones a bad name. But the truth of the matter is, if you empathize with them, you will be in a better position to engage with them. And so I know Spencer's going to have some things to share. We're about to cut him loose here. What do you have to share? What would you like to call out with regard to interviewing and vetting candidates?
You know, I managed in this space for 7 years of my career, and I did a lot of interviewing from just cold calls of resumes, HR dropping a stack of resumes to canvassing on college canvases. And I found the most pleasure I had was interviewing students on campus because, you know, they're full of just, you know, that whole thing, gung-ho. Mm-hmm. You know, they're willing to roll up their sleeves and not be so, the pride, they have no pride. They want a job. Give me an opportunity. And you can see it written on their face. You see it in their resume, and you hear it in their voice.
Yeah.
And to me, those were good face-to-face time values of understanding who these individuals are, or potentially what we would do. And then you would make little notes in the side columns on their resume as you look down, and you try to maintain the eye contact. But then sometimes if I was lucky, I could bring an assistant along and they would do the notes and I would just drive the question and they would just jot down the notes in the areas where I would say, hey, yeah, you know, make sure you capture that. But what I found out about the whole interview process, and here again, you know, we would interview a lot of, I mean, I interview a lot of people, but you know, the numbers of people of color that we interview for these UX roles were far and few. I mean, we had a lot of people of Indian descent because Indian people from India tend to be very technology embracing, and this field, UX, was something that they always wanted to get in. And a lot of it was the fact that programmers, the people that were the CIA, you know, the computer science majors tend to be one-sided as well, right? You know, I always saw the same vein of people, and it vexed me a little bit because maybe at that time I should have said, why aren't there more people, especially minorities, programming? Why aren't we concerned about technology? Because one day we're going to have to live with this stuff, right? As we are now, because I never saw enough of that. And that was something that in the back of my mind that I was asking those questions. And then I would ask I went back to the UC Berkeley where we were recruiting, and I asked the counselor, I says, hey, where are my minority candidates? And they said, and she pulled me aside and she said, well, we don't have that many computer science majors that are really interested in this area. I said, well, what about the other major? Because when we canvassed campuses, we sort of cast a wide net. You know, we were looking for art majors. We were potentially looking at people who were history majors or anthropologists or people with different disciplines to bring in the fold. So, but there was never really, I thought, enough of people of my or ethnic background that would show up at these interview sessions or these campuses. I mean, because this was money that we were spending at UC Berkeley. I mean, they gave us a nice swath of area on the campus, the community common halls where all the students would pass through. I mean, I would have a few that people would come by and look at read the brochure material, and they would say, oh, this is an interesting field. You think I could get into it? I said, well, don't think about it. Step up. Bring me your resume. Let's sit down and have that conversation. I just think it's just, for me at that time, why weren't they challenging enough? Because I was raised by a family. If I wanted something, say something. If I wanted to do something, do something. I could not rest on the laurels. I could not rest on, you know, and that's a good thing you brought that up, Darren, about the dream. We can't live on the dream. We have to live. If you want the lights to stay turned on in your house, or if you want to put your kids to college, or if you want to buy that car, that dream goes out the door. Yeah. I'll tell you the reason. My reason why is that I want to eat. I have a style of living that I want to adhere to. There are places in the world I want to see, for those of us who know, it takes money to get there. Or if you were in the position at these organizations, these companies, you get those opportunities. They put you in these, and that happened to me. I mean, I was working for a company, a Silicon Valley company. Next thing you know, they sent me to France. I was in France. I was in Germany. You know, I was in Switzerland. So I got opportunity because I applied myself. So these are the things I think in the interviewing process I'm looking for in candidates, is that drive, first of all, to drop in, sit down in front of me or have the conversation. Even because, as I said, you know, during the interview process at UC Berkeley, we opened up our canvassing to everyone. It wasn't so much that we were looking for the computer science majors, although they were like the predominant people. I went back to the counselors. I said, hey, listen, I want more people from diversity, from all these, because what we do in UX, it's the disciplines that require to empathize with our users, that is, understand someone trying to use a product who have no knowledge, you have to have some sort of ability to say, if I was in their shoes, what would I feel like? And if you think back in your life, there are times when you just didn't know things and you just raise your hand and go, hey, I'm going to ask a dumb question. I don't know what the F I'm doing here because I don't know about how to use this product. Or, oh, I stumble into a product where I'm banging around on the UI going like, wow, this is real interesting. I don't understand what they're trying to accomplish here. So, but to rein all this back in, the vetting is getting the candidates and then having the triage, because I know when I would single out resumes and go back to my boss, who at the, initially she was my best friend. We were really good. We were a good duo because she wanted to build a UX empire out of ashes because the guy, her predecessor, had tore down the group and basically he did some things, some unsavory things. And so wow. the organization was looking at us a different way. And we had to rebuild everything from from scratch. So we would have conversations. We would look at these resumes and go through them one by one. And we say, okay, what are the strengths and weaknesses of this person? You know, and at that time it was more about, I think she was more jaded about the fact that she wanted people who had CIS skills, computer science skills, more so than the people I felt that could do this. Because as I said, I think I said on your last show, Darren, I had one friend of mine who was a music major, and she wound up being one of the most talented programmers that Apple had. And this is back in the day. She walked in and she never programmed a line of code in her life. The woman sat down and she blew the doors off these guys because it's a structure. I think if you understand music and notes and measures, you can figure out how to put programs and algorithms together and how structured languages work, because music is a structured language if you think about it. But and she became one of their top flight developers, and we're still friends today because Nancy has gone, she's been at Stanford, she's taught at Stanford, and she's gone, and she was at WebVM, she's gone through all the startups, and she's done a lot. So it's not where you came from or what you've done, disciplined, it's what you want.
Yeah.
You can do it. If you want it bad enough, you will get there. And I think that's where that vetting with candidates, and sometimes you have to get candidates to believe in themselves, especially when they're young. Mm-hmm. And they're still trying to figure it out. It's the old salty dogs. Well, okay, and we'll get to that. Someone, they walk in, you know, and you're like, okay, well, then why are you here looking for a job if you're walking on water? Well, obviously there's something going on in this guy's past or career, but he's wound up at our front door, right? You know, these things happen. So you gotta look and stir long enough, and it's just, you know, having the fortitude of asking questions and listening. I think I mentioned this in our last series. I think the biggest part of our work, especially in UX, you have to learn, you have to be a damn good listener. You have to be able to listen to people and to be able to ascertain what's really going on as to, you know, how do you pitch a solution? Or what is this product all about? Or is it really a product? Or do we have PM product managers who are just selling you a line of smoke because the guy's on his way out and he's got his own agenda that he's either going to run it off the rails or he wants to leave, you know, right off into the sunset saying, well, see, this is what I did, right? So I think it's that whole thing. If you bring this all back to the interview process and vetting, it's sort of like finding those individuals that are most likely to succeed.
Yes.
And wear your blinders and not look at what they are, who they represent, and the color of their skin. It's just ability to get the work done. But unfortunately, I would like to see more people of color challenging this space, you know, dipping their toes into it, becoming developers, understanding structured languages. Or if you're a music major, even if you're a music major, you know, if music is a hobby and everybody can't be the next shining star artist, well, then you got to keep the lights turned on. I mean, and I think this is a good career if you understand it and build a good foundation.
Yeah.
Come in, try to understand exactly what you want to do because it's a broad field, and then start specializing yourself. Maybe start as a general to be a usability engineer like I did, because I just sat and I would run the shows, run the tapes, come back and dissect the tapes. And I would just look at people's facial expressions as they were looking at things. And I'm like, the psychology behind that is it's so much rewarding. How many psych classes have you taken? You talk about this, the Freud says, okay, the theoretical stuff, throw it out the window. I mean, when the reality is when people are confronted with issues, it's the facial expression. What are their eyes doing? Where are their hands going? And that facial expression is priceless.
Yes.
It is priceless. When they're confounded and you're like, you know what? I should not build a product and see that expression on anyone's face. But
yep.
But we continue to do this. We continue to build products and do it. It's just that's how I learned. That's mm-hmm. how I learned, and my career went from there to where it is now. I started out just, you know, understanding what the usability issues are when we're building products. And the vetting, it's the same thing. You're vetting all that information, and then when you're rolling that back up into an interview, you try to picture that individual in that scenario. Are they going to be able to capture those things for you if you put them on the front lines? Or are they just going to be people that you just say, okay, you're good at dissecting tape. I need you to take these hours of usability session and break this stuff up into an 8-minute segment. Give me the highs and lows, yeah. Right? You know, and I think there's a lot of ways to get involved in this business, but I think that's part of that vetting thing. But to tie it all back, the interview is just to find the right candidates, the people who really want to do this.
Yes. And there was something that you said during the preliminaries that I wanted to bring up. I thought it was dynamite. And people, again, trying to help people empathize, understand what's going on in the head of the hiring manager and those people. You mentioned, I'm going to flip the script now to speak to those who are in leadership and help them out, or just make people just go into retro mode. Because mm-hmm. sometimes it's not that we don't know certain things. We just need to be reminded of it, or we just need our memories stirred up to give it some thought so that certain things could be at the forefront of our minds. You said, and I quote, there's an art to interviewing. Can you elaborate on that?
You know, the art of interviewing is, you know, we have to tie this other back to listening to people, because as I told you in the example I use, because I had an interview with a gentleman a couple of days ago. And I said, if we were in an elevator together and we only had, we're going from the ground floor to the fifth floor, and you hear this a lot as well, give me your elevator pitch. Give me what I need to know about who you are, such that it will beckon me to ask further down other questions, because you should know who you are as an individual enough, or just say you got to be comfortable enough in your skin to take that on as a challenge. I got 5 minutes or less to express who I am, what my journey is, where I started, and come to some conclusion point that when that door opens up, to say, well, do you want to know more? Do I want to turn the page in this book to continue to read, or do I want to just say, you know what? No, I don't get it. Because I think there's a science to it, and I think there's a way of, you know, through time, through the art of understanding who you are, maybe this is a minority thing, because I'm challenged. I had this author, not author, but when I came out of college, the guy came to me and said, Spencer, you always need to have your resume in your briefcase because you never know when you're going to get that interview opportunity. And he was so right. He was so right, because I used, and I still do that. I do carry my resume, but it's on a thumb drive. By the way, it's not a hard copy. It's on a thumb drive. I never leave home without it, because you never know who that person you're going to be sitting next to on a plane. And this has happened to me. I've sat at airports and lounges where I've sat down and I didn't know who I was sitting next to. And it's some executive at some exotic corporation. And you have that conversation. You start out with a 5-minute. Who I am, blah blah blah, whatever that is, and then he'll ask you, because if you're dynamic enough, or if there are phrases or things that you're mentioning that are qualifying who you are, and the individual really wants to hear what you have to say, then you can take that next step. So that, to me, it's a 5-minute elevator pitch that you have to develop. It's like carrying your resume around with you at all times and being ready to present on a moment's notice. So. That's what I meant by that. And that was the individual that I talked to. And unfortunately, he didn't do a very good job, but then we'll see how the story unfolds for that attack.
You also mentioned a book that intrigued me that, of course, I've got a huge library and I want to run out and get a copy of this book. You mentioned a book by the name of Build. Yeah. And you talked about how this person, there are two things that you said that stuck out to me or stood out. One of them was how he talked about empowering people. And he said, you can't be afraid. I'm paraphrasing this one. You can't be afraid to bring people smarter than you onto your team. This is something that's been a huge issue for me. Yeah. As a person who has two master's degrees, I get rejected because people are scared to death of me. Yeah. I've got two master's degrees, not one. There was a day when they said, well, no, Darren, we can't move forward your candidacy because you don't have a degree. Now, oh, Darren, and they don't tell you this. Well, we're just going to go with someone else whose qualifications more closely align with our requirements. There's nobody. Yeah. It looked like you looked at my resume and wrote this job description. So that's not really what's happening here. There's something else going on. And I can't tell you the number of times.
Moving the goalposts is what they call it. They're moving the goalposts on you, Darren.
Yeah. I'm like, no. I had a person once where I didn't go forward in an interview process. And I'm like, okay, this doesn't make any sense at all. And they gave me that same spiel. Whoever the first person was that wrote that should be ashamed of themselves. I think I said that last week, that whole someone else whose qualifications more closely aligned. And then I find out that the person who gets the job had a tenth of my experience. So if that person more closely aligned with your requirements or your qualifications, then you didn't write the job description well, or you had some type of a hidden agenda, but there's something wrong. I talked to a person recently in the UX Chit Chat Hour meeting who said that people were coming to her on LinkedIn. She was not even applying. People were coming directly to her to offer her UX director positions. Person of color. But that wasn't it. They were coming to her. She didn't have any experience in UX. She got some education in UX, but she doesn't have the 15, 20, 25 years. But they wanted her to be, she didn't have the 2 years, if I remember correctly, but they wanted her to be the director. I'm like, what is going on here? And we actually shared our insights. Some of us that were senior in that discussion, we shared our insights. A lot of people, very few people hire a real UX people to run their UX teams. That's a known fact. They love bringing in the art director. They love bringing in the creative director. I know a company that hired a former developer who had no UX experience whatsoever and only 4 years of development to be ahead over that particular group of UX professionals. I'm like, how's that person going to mentor somebody? How is that person going to guide and manage UX maturity? You talk to a bunch of them, they don't even know what UX maturity is, but they're the director. They don't know what UX maturity is. And so when you talked about this book, and this guy, he nailed it. You got to bring in people. You cannot be afraid to bring in people smarter than you. That job I mentioned, I sort of jumped to another story. When I looked, when they told me, and I told them that, I told them what I thought. This person said that I didn't have any e-commerce experience. How can you, I think I talked about this last week as well. A person who's been doing UX for 27 years has e-commerce experience. He assumed that I didn't have any e-commerce experience. He wanted to believe that I didn't have any e-commerce experience so that he could dismiss me from consideration. But you know, because I have a lot of e-commerce experience, but right. That wasn't really the problem. When I finally looked up that person's profile on LinkedIn, that person had 10 years. He was the director. I was interviewing for a manager's position. This is one of the problems when you, I don't care any, I don't want your job, you know, but some of these people, they want somebody's job if they were in my shoes. And so they have a hard time realizing and coming to grips with the fact that some of us are actually humble and we don't want to be the bird. You have to go to more meetings than me. Enjoy. I'm gone. I know how it works when you're in that position. I know how much of your life you're going to have to give up when you're in that position. But I was just trying to get a manager's position for a big retail company here in the States. I interviewed for another Fortune 50 company. And they decided to, I got the same notice. Oh, we're going to go with somebody else whose qualifications are a bit more aligned with it. You know, I'm going, that is such it's such malarkey that you know that there are some hidden agenda or reasons, because you don't get people who've been doing UX for 25, 26, 27, 30 years coming through your doors applying for a job. And if you can't find a place for that person on your team, somebody doesn't know something about UX, and it's not the applicant in such case. So I go on my little mini rant there on that, but I'll hand it over to you.
Well, okay, so the book, I'll bring it up here shortly, but to answer or to chime in on your question, I think those people fear, they have a lack of respect for themselves, whether they realize it or not, and whether or not they want to build a successful organization. You can't build a successful organization hiring people that look just like you. There's just no way about it. I mean, if I was the CEO of a company, I wouldn't want to hire people like me. I would hire people who would demonstrate skill sets that probably far exceeds some of the things that I've kind of like just looked at and said, well, Kirsten, kind of, I wave my hand, but maybe this person's got a better perspective on it. They can rein it in and apply those metrics to where we're going and where, how do we need to get there? So yeah, especially when you say the individual that they prefer, you know, it's sort of like sometimes they come up with this club attitude where maybe she was a director of something at another organization, and just because she had director in her title, they feel more comfortable. Well, director, you know how to handle budgets, you know how to handle resources and monies, and you need to come up with that spreadsheet and stand up and wave your hand at the PowerPoint presentation and saying blah, blah, blah. So yeah, that's probably part of some of that. It's hard to say, you know, what goes through an individual's mind when they make those sort of decisions, because, you know, we're human, right? You know, we're prone to error. And then the other thing is they tend to believe what they want to believe, and they won't unbelieve what they think. It's sort of like you don't know what you don't know sometimes, right? And I think a lot of those individuals are in that category. They just don't know what they don't know, and therefore they're going to take what they assume to be the right, and they're going to go that way. And you could bellow at them till the moon turns green, and they'll never change their attitude about, well, I'm still gonna stick with that person because I still have an affinity to them. But back to this book, it's called Build, and the subtitle is the Unorthodox Guide to Making Things Work Worth Making. So he goes through this whole, his name, and the author's name is Tony Fadell, and he goes through this whole thing about who he is and how he got on, you know, where he is in his life. So, and one of the things that caught my eye, or as I'm listening to it, because I try to multitask, and I usually buy my books on Audible, and I can walk around listening and doing other things, and then things just kind of fly through that sort of subconsciousness. He brought up the term about, you know, as he kind of his last journey that he's currently on with Quest, and how he built the team from zero. I mean, because, you know, he got the idea to build, come up with this thermostat on the wall, and, you know, from Google, and, you know, and then Google sold it off, and he was able to take it and he ran with it as his own entity. But the thing is that I think for me, the takeaway was that he felt that he wanted to hire people who were talented enough to do the work, not so much that he wanted to hire people that was just like him. He wanted people who were, if not, they were talented, and if they happened to be smarter, he was even that much more attracted to them. Because those people are going to open up other avenues and lead your organization in a much more productive way.
Yep.
If you give them the resources and stay out of the way. And I think that was what I got initially from my boss that I was managing for at Lotus IBM. She gave me the resources and she stayed out of the way initially. Yep. And I was able to grow that team and build it out. And the things that we were doing, I mean, we were mimicking stuff that Intuit was doing, and Intuit was knocking it out of the park at that time.
Yeah.
And we were following in their footsteps, and I was able to get programs initiated. So she was willing to take hands off and say, Spencer, I trust you. You're going to do the right thing. And she stayed out of the way, and she became just more of the, come to my meetings. I want a progress report. I give her a progress report. And then we would talk about funding. She would say, okay, how much money would you need to run these sessions? Or how many people do we need to add to our organization so we cover more ground or more distance? Or what is that topic that you talked about in the last meeting, utilizing some of the techniques that Intuit uses? So she empowered me because she didn't feel any fear that I would sidestep or step over the boundaries. Now, over time, that wore out. And then when I followed her to the startup, things got, I don't know how we got sideways with each other, but things, maybe things wear out over a period of time. Who knows? But anyway, back to Tony, this guy, Tony Fadell, talks about it in the same sense of people that he had worked with at other organizations along that path. And he would bring them in. And sometimes that the feeling was that they knew one another. They knew their strengths and weaknesses, right? Because him being the CEO, he had to be willing to listen to critique feedback, to criticism about what you're doing. And I think, especially in UX, we have to be thin, not thin-skinned, but we have to be, have the willingness to look, be critiqued and understand that, okay, if I personalize it, then it becomes an issue for me, right? Because you're now taking the problem and manifested it into something else where it need not have gone. So I think the thing is just sort of having that ability to be reflective enough, but at the same time saying, okay, I can go forward and still be productive without the fear of this person that I'm hiring that who could wind up being my boss, right? You know, who eventually would just, he'd blow past me. But the hope is that you, because what you're building is a community, that community of people who are like-minded, who see this, the same plight of the empathy that what we're trying to build, the problems that come up, and we see it all the time with products, the same products or same issues, or you buy that egg maker in the kitchen from Cuisinart, which was a big name, and you look at the instructions, and you're like, damn, you know, who wrote up the instructions for this device, and why is it written up this way, right? You're like, come on, guys. But see, these are the things that if the Cuisinart had, you know, especially from their usability perspective, and when they were, I'm assuming they ran some research on it, and they had people unbox this stuff and try to go make a poached egg, that they would fall and find this stuff. But maybe who knows? It's hard to say in different product organization how that stuff comes together. So yeah, to answer your question, it's it's just being comfortable in your skin. And it always comes back to being how comfortable you are with yourself. Mm-hmm. If you have the fortitude and the wherewithal to weather it, you can. There's a lot of things that we don't know what we're capable of doing, but we still have to be comfortable where we are in the food chain, in the process. And then you need to have a good rapport with your manager, right? You know, that was something I told you on the sidebar, that, you know, currently I have that rapport with my manager, and hopefully it'll stay that way, because it's a trust, right? You know, it's that trust. It's sort of like, you know, the dog, when a dog will trust you, he will roll over and show you his belly, right? Because that's a very vulnerable part of his being that he's not going to allow, not just everybody to touch it, especially with cats. You know, when you have a cat.
Oh, yeah.
Cat will not let you roll her on her back and rub her stomach. If she didn't trust you, she going to, you know, them claws are coming out round. You know, you're going to get swiped. No, that ain't cool. I didn't say you could do that. You know, she's telling you, I didn't say you could do that. So I think we as individuals, you know, we have to be willing to be vulnerable, but at the same time, there has to be some trust between you and your manager and your organization that they're going to do the right thing by you.
Yeah. And I'll even put one of the icing on the cake on that. Everything you just said remind me of the whole EQ thing again, how critical it is. The best leaders have high emotional intelligence. Yes. The leaders that don't, the leaders that are not self-aware, the leaders that have the whole EQ red flags episode that I did. If a leader has those traits, You need to run for the hills or try to find out if they have those traits during the interview process. If you're a candidate, so then you don't want to go to that organization. If they are not secure in themselves, you are in trouble. Yeah. And some people want a job so badly that they'll ignore the red flags, only to you find them 5 months later pulling their hair out somewhere on social media. Yeah. So please, folks, take heed to that. We already touched on the second topic in the midst of all that, mm-hmm. but how people present themselves, and people mm-hmm. do need, folks, you do need to be succinct. I'm just going to summarize that and revisit for a moment. You need to be able to be succinct. If you cannot present yourself in a succinct manner, you're going to flat out blow it. I was told, yeah. I mean, some people do not know how to interview. And yeah. I mean, from a leadership perspective, that we have to go through training to know how to interview people the right way. There are yeah. legal ramifications associated with interviewing. Yeah. So you got to make sure that you crossed all your T's and dotted all your I's from a legal perspective, let alone the skills that you need to vet people out, what to look for, what kind of questions to ask. Those of you who are candidates out there, if you've never heard me make this recommendation before, there's a phenomenal book called 60 Seconds and You're Hired. I highly recommend everybody out there who is a regular job seeker or you're new, please go and get that book because it will help you to understand how to present yourself during the interview process. It is worth its weight in gold. It doesn't cost mm-hmm. much. It's a very, it's not a very thick book at all. And it's an easy read. So I highly recommend that. But if you're a candidate, you need to be emotionally intelligent. Leaders need to be emotionally intelligent. And you need to be, when you're more emotionally intelligent as a candidate, you're in a better position to spot what you need to spot, the red flags. Right. During right. the interview process, because a company will tell you if they're nuts, not to say it that way, during the interview process. and if they treat you badly during the interview process, you know what's waiting up ahead. Because companies like that feel that they own you.
Yeah.
And they will. Well, I think, oh my God. Go ahead.
I think one of the things that I learned, before I even started managing, and I'm glad because, normally when you work at these big companies, like some microsystems, we had two tracks of career development. You could go technical or you could go management. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to write code anymore. And I was in UX. I said I would go to management route. But you know what the beauty of that, it took a year, and it was like going to Sun University. They sent us, we not only we had our normal day-to-day tasks to do, but we were giving coursework and we had a lot of offsites. I mean, literally we were always off away studying these different use cases, management cases. And you're right, that whole thing about interviewing, and that was a biggie. There was a lot of red flags, questions you couldn't ask, mm-hmm. How you presented yourself. The whole nine yards, and we would do role playing to we had to do an examination at the end. But it was a year's worth of coursework and prep to be a management in the system. And it was a year. Darren, it took us a year to complete that. And a lot of us, we started out together. Some people just got, they were either said, this is not really work. But I stuck around. I did the whole thing. And part of it was we were given opportunity when managers would go on vacation, we would sit in and we would have to be a manager for the. So we were given problems and had to respond to those problems as if we were the managers, and we had to live with those repercussions. So I think when an organization presents these type of opportunities, especially for people of color, get these opportunities, take them because they're worth their weight in gold. It's the payback will always, and that's something I learned a long time ago prior to my even getting in a management role, because I was so prepared for this. I was so prepared to step into resourcing and how to deal with people on a day-to-day basis, because a lot of managers get these roles and they just don't know what they're doing. And they can kill a product or they can kill the team. And they just literally, and before they know, they've driven so many people have quit and left the organization. And this is one of the things that Tony, he talks about this as well in his book, is noticing that in individuals and making sure you're not one of those type of people.
Yes.
And you just, it's one of those things that if, I don't know how you market, or, well, organizations that are paying attention aren't going to let you go out and do that. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
The good organizations, but there's too many organizations that just by hoodwink or nod that the next guy up gets the job, and whether or not he's qualified for it is your guess, good as your guess, as good as mine. So that's the problem that we face with. It causes the repercussions is bad questions, that question that, you know, oh, I didn't know who you really were, or you showed up in my chair and, you know, you don't really have that right. You know, you don't look like the guy, you don't sound like that guy, but you are that guy that I have, you know, my stereotypes built up about in their head. So these are the things that, you know, you see, or I've encountered, you know, throughout my career, encountered on many numerous occasions that's typically to me, that's what happens.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. Last topic. And this one is sort of broad, but I think we got roughly 15 minutes, I think, here.
Okay.
We want to talk about management. Again, helping people to see things from the management side. So to equip people to be able to empathize. So we want to talk about management highlights, tips for managers, light bulb moments that we've had as managers, challenges that have come up. We've already talked about a few, so we'll go into it a little bit more here. Good segue. And pitfalls. What comments or what things would you like to highlight today or address with regard to management in the UX world?
Oh, God, so much. You know, management in the UX world is just, I'm going to be honest with you, so many organizations have its stance. You know, they just, because of the fact of what I call pre-qualified in your earlier question, they were the next person up, they got the job, and they don't have a clue as to, you know, where they're going. They've gotten, you know, and this is serious, seriously, because I mean, because this is the big bang institution in San Francisco. I just roll out of off of a contract. It's just, you know, it's bad. It's just, and then you know when you have a bad manager and they don't know what's going on, and then, you know, they call you aside, and then they give you the, what I call the blank stare. Although we're working remote, I could see her eyes, the blank stare, and it's just, it really isn't, she really doesn't grasp but she's got to do something because someone told her she had to do something.
Yeah.
Right. But she doesn't know why she's doing that something. And so organizations, when you stumble in these things and you run into these cases and you look at them, they do themselves a disservice because, you know, the track record gets out there. We as employees talk to one another. And if someone asked me, would I go work for these guys in this particular group? I would say no. Why? Because they have a track record of bad management there, or they don't understand the use of UX resources or how to organize UX resources. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I come in to, you know, my latest stint where I have to come in and I feel as though I have to manage up. And sometimes in management situations, you got to manage up. Not only manage down, you got to manage up. You have to manage your manager. And sometimes you got to manage him to manage his manager as to really what's really going on, right? Yep. And how do we get there? You know, how do we get here? And how do we make this better? And do you really care about what's going on? Because I'm going to regurgitate some of the things I'm hearing because I'm down here with the other individual contributors, and I'm going to relay that back to you. And it's not that I'm going to say this person said, I'm just going to say, this is what I hear. This is what I'm acknowledging. And these are the things that you need to be aware of. So I think the organizations in the whole management of UX really need to better understand the people's resources. And then they have to have an active voice to provide input at the C-suite level to say, no, this is not the way to go. And these are the reasons why. And that's where you have to be in tune with the product you're trying to build. People, if you don't have people on staff to do what you think you need to do, you need to say, and by the way, I need to hire X, Y, and Z, or I need these additional resources to make sure that we get there. Because as you and I both know, everything today is about the CX. People vote with their feet. People vote by leaving those accounts. And then when those numbers go in the negative direction, all of a sudden, all hands on deck. Everybody wants to know what the X is going on. Why are we losing followers? Why are we shrinking? Our growth is not where it used to be. And it's because it's about the CX. It's how people engage with the product that you build on a day-to-day basis, and whether or not you were listening to the people who were trying to tell you all along that customer journey path that this was a bad thing, and these were the things that was happening. And this is when here again, I'm going to harken back to Tony's autofile. He talks about some of these things, and which is interesting, how you have to be willing to fall on your sword. It's that when things go bad, he says, you know, stop pointing fingers. Just say, reorganize. Let's think it out. Let's figure it out. And therefore, we'll go forward. I don't want anyone, you know, saying, because you'll get to the point where who made the mistake. That's going to come up. That will come up. But the thing is how do you recover from a potential tragedy and a product strategization? And then because everything we see and do today, there's that CX portion of it, right? Where people touch. They touch your product. And now we have electronic medium and you got TikTok. People go and do a damaging video about how bad things are. And man, you get trashed. Yes. Before you know it, you're trashed. Right? You're yesterday's go-to because you weren't paying attention. You just that person, you had a blind spot when you were building this thing, or you here again. The job got passed to, we'll let George do it. You know, he's from marketing. George doesn't give a rat ass about UX. He's just like, you know, another thing he's got to man. I've heard, well, I don't know what UX is. They just gave it to me. And I don't know what I need to do. He said, I'm just told I got to do something. Oh God. And I work for you.
I know somebody. I work here. You just remind me. I know somebody who has a manager that got the role, the exact thing you just described, and he actually confessed, well, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just faking it till I make it.
Yeah.
How many people, how many leaders, and how many companies have fake it till you make it leaders in place that bypassed a truly qualified person for whatever the political reasons were that they did it? And I've heard about a lot. I've seen a lot of them. I've heard about a lot of them. I've been passed over. I had an entire UX team mobilize against me to keep me from getting a director's position once.
Yeah.
At a Fortune, what was that? Fortune 200 company. I mentioned information architecture and they got mad. I did a talk about what is UX and I made them look bad because of what I said. And, so they got mad and they decided to do the equivalent of lynching me. Because when people keep you from advancing in your career, that's what they're doing. When they keep you from getting hired, when they keep you, when they damage the perception that people have of you simply because they don't want you to get ahead because they feel insignificant or inferior within themselves. That's it's interesting. It's interesting. And none of this stuff was ever covered in school, but God knows we sure do experience it a lot.
No, and you're right. It's not in the books. It's not text written. And it's like the people who are less confident in who they are as individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, one guy, what he told me, he said was the monkey syndrome. Because monkeys, when they climb up the tree, they climb up on each other's back, right? And these guys will climb up over you and just pull you down. Because if they see you going up, well, why should I let you go any higher than me? Or, well, I'm going to grab on that leg. And now you got, you're trying to go up that tree with one arm and you got the other arm, two people hanging on that arm. And I think that's an organizational fault.
Yeah.
A flaw that the organization has not addressed or want to address. Because if you hire that kind of what I call shallow people and their goals are so myopic where they're just sort of overly concerned about each other. I mean, they should be challenged enough to where, you know, they got work that is challenging. They got tasks. And, you know, and you know, why not? Why can't we increase our, you know, our footprint in the organization? And yeah, if Darren's got the wherewithal to promote, you know, the IA and our organization to pull down more substantial, well, why not? Well, let's boost. Let's make sure he gets there, right? So, but see, it's camaraderie. It's just being feeling good in your skin, feeling good that the person that you put before you is going to get the job done. And, you know, whether you look back and help them out, that's immaterial. But the thought is, or the well-wishing thought is that, you know, once you get to where you're going to go, you're going to recognize those people who help you get there, and you're going to bring them along, and they're going to come with you, right? So it's to me, it's, you can't always go into the philosophical thinking, well, what's in it for me? Well,
yeah,
it may not be anything for you. Maybe you're just saying the positive thing to say, yeah, he's a good guy. He can get the work done. That's it. You got the opportunity to express that.
Yeah. And when you say that, you also remind me of what I constantly say about UX, that it's about the discipline first.
Yeah. That
when I'm doing my podcast, it's about helping the discipline. When I'm posting, when I'm loud, as I like to say, I'm loud on social media. Well, one app said that my social media reach is actually 4.5 to 5 million. That was astounding to me, you know, and it's like, okay, well, that's interesting. But I'm glad I take what I'm doing seriously, but people need to understand there's nothing about this has anything to do with Darren Hood. It's the discipline. If more of us would put the discipline first, man, where would we be? Yeah. Instead of, and when you talked about the monkeys, it made me think about the old crabs in the bucket scenario that somebody said that if you have a bunch of crabs in a bucket, you don't even have to put a lid on top of it. Because every time one crab looks like he might get out, another crab will pull him down.
Yeah.
And so they keep themselves down. And unfortunately, I see that a lot in UX today too. That people, they don't want to see other people get ahead. We're trying to vault as many people ahead as are interested and willing to go ahead. We want to give you the wherewithal to be able to do that. And to go past me. I don't care. It's going to take you a while. You didn't just come in UX last week and you're going to vault past me next week. You forget that because it's a lifelong learning commitment. I'm 27 years, still learning. You're in it longer than that. Still learning. We're always learning. And I'm not racing with anybody. I'm not trying to be more than anybody. So I'm like, Darren, who are you trying to be an influencer? Actually, number one, no, I'm not. Number two, when you've been doing it as long as once you reach a certain threshold of experience in UX, you're not trying to do anything anymore. You just do. And so we just do the work.
Yeah.
It flows naturally. It's all second nature. Now, I can be sitting at a table in Starbucks and somebody have a conversation and bring me into the conversation, and I will naturally go through the same mental process to be able to provide them with the input that they're looking for. You just do it. And then you leave and you never see the people again, and you've impacted them. They've gone off and made $1 million and you see them on TV and you're happy. You just do it. The only people that are trying to stand out or trying to do something are the people who have to do it. They have to put forth a mega conscious and deliberate effort because it is not natural to them yet. And people don't understand that. That's just the way that it goes. You don't have to, if a guy's an auto mechanic, he's not trying to do X, Y, and Z. It just flows through him. If they've been doing it for a long time, if a person is a master chef, all you have to do is start a particular conversation or put certain things in front of them, and they just automatically snap into it because it's a natural thing. And it's funny that these people who throw these terrible statements out here and casting aspersions, the only people that believe them are the people that know less than them.
Yeah.
And all of that is hurting the discipline. So I'm making a plea as we get ready to shift and close today. Making a plea to folks, be careful. I said at the beginning of the podcast today, it's time for truth to go viral. I've said many times, misinformation didn't even exist in UX prior to 2011, but it's everywhere now. And so you got to be careful. So be careful of the sources that you tap into. because it's gonna impact your trajectory.
Yeah,
what you choose to listen to. If there was a guy on LinkedIn, somebody, I try to stay away from LinkedIn on the weekends. Somebody shared a post. There was a guy that said 99.9% of the jobs that are available come either through a recommendation or a referral. And I'm going, wow, where did you get that terrible blind data? Because that is nowhere near being true. But how many people believed it? How many people liked it? And how many people retweeted it? Because it was a tweet. So until people start to become more selective, and I've told this story before, when I didn't have any money, when I was living off of $99 a week, I was in a government, going through a government program. I lived off of Just at Water Pancakes, literally, Spencer. I lived off of Just at Water Pancakes, Instant Grits, and those orange, those terrible orange veal patties. Veal isn't orange, but we still ate these orange breaded veal patties. That's what I lived on. Today, I'm going to the steakhouse. Today, I'm going to Eddie V's. I'm going to Shula's Steakhouse. I'm going to Morton's today. I couldn't do that back then. Right. And so the moral of that story is that once you've developed resources and you've built yourself up, that's when you become selective. People are not selective today, and they don't realize it because they don't have any oomph. They don't have any substance. And when you don't have any substance, you eat whatever comes across, whatever you feel you can grab in the store.
Well, you know, it's like you said about the platform. You know, they may not have any wherewithal, but because they have these social media platforms, they throw it out there. It's, you know, it's like somebody was interviewing Zuckerberg, and I think the guy said he was even downplaying the monster he had created. It's sort of like, because not to say sort of like, social media has sort of unhinged reality that makes no sense to reality.
Yeah.
It's just that person's reality, and flawed thinking is out there. And it's precipitous enough to where it isn't all the DNA of our lives, and especially in our careers, and as you were describing the UX career path of understanding things, and then people who have a little bit of knowledge will spoil the water by throwing something on and come across as if he's been an expert with years of experience. You know, there are people, you know, that I'll listen to when Jacob Nielsen says something. Yeah, I'm going to stand up and listen to it because the guy's got tread. He's been there. I mean, he created this stuff, right? He was him and Don Norman are the fathers of this stuff. So what they say, I'm going to listen to him. They're like my dad. You know, until they put my dad in the ground, he sat at the head of the table. He was the go-to guy. And what I believe, and yeah, I had to put my filters on because I knew my father and this is how I wanted to be, but I wouldn't be so much like him. But it's that whole thing of understanding where that truth and wisdom come from. But you don't get that overnight.
Yeah.
It's like you said, you just don't. I don't know how many people are born with that, unless you were, you know, born in an incubator. You know, did they put you in an incubator and someone come in and they give you a dose of UX? So when you get to be
the Matrix.
A teenager, you can, yeah, the Matrix.
You plug system, up to the back.
Yeah. Give him a Neo. Give him a Neo thing. I know Kung Fu now. You know, you see that you're exactly right. There's so many candidates and people out there with 1 or 2 years experience. And when you talk to them, you go, oh my God. So I don't embrace them. I won't say I avoid them, but then when they come up and when they're out of line and they're in the interview process, because a lot of times it's, you know, this is what we were talking about, the interview process. You run into them in the interview process and you gotta go through it. You gotta grin and bear it. And you just go, okay, this joker's gonna do this, we're gonna go here, and then you go there. And then he will come back with some silly disqualification because I get to see the notes, you know, the recruiter will give me the notes and I'm like, how? Oh. And then you go look at this guy and then you say, okay, let me go check this guy out. You go on LinkedIn, you look at it and say, he's got 2 years of experience. And man, and I'm like, how could he? But you see, This is the reality. This is the new reality. This is the new norm, right? This is our new norm that we have to live with.
Yeah.
So it's organizational, institutionalized stuff. And it's just, it's a day in our lives that we have to live through. Right. And the hope is, you're right, this, that the information that you build in your podcast will one day, someone sitting on the plane will spin up your podcast, hear these dialogues, and some manager somewhere will say, you know what, there may be some truth into what the decision I made, and it may not be the best decision. I mean, let me rethink that. Or maybe let me dig and research a little bit more instead of just hiring a director. Can I find a director with some experience in UX? Or do I have anybody on my staff who could work at the director level, who's potential and they've been doing this for a while? Or can I bring someone in without a director category and make them a director? Because when I interview with them, I get the fit, I get the vibe or the feedback from the interview process. He's a balanced individual and I feel comfortable saying, okay, I can put this guy in a director role and with minimum my support, he will take off and he'll be a well-valued member contributing to our organization going forward in the future. So that's that whole hope. And that was what, you know, the Tony, because that's when I was listening to that, because I have the audio file and I listen to it throughout my day to off and on. It resonates because he, in reality, he's had the opportunities to live it. In my realities, in rational world, has been a bit different. Our paths started literally at the same time. He lost money in 2000 like I did when the whole tech sector. He was there when they couldn't give Apple computers away, right? You know, it was iPod that brought Apple back. It was, but see, it was a vision that Jobs kept saying, no, you know, we will build what we build and sell it well because our vision. And then I know I'm dragging you on, but his story, he says his story was that thread where Steve Jobs would repeat enough of that at the corporate level that when he would go and speak to the, what they call those meetings where the PE ratios, where they call in and Wall Street will call a company and say, okay, how are you doing? What are you guys rolling out? Because we want to evaluate your company's evaluation period. Mm-hmm. He would speak it often enough that he could tell them essentially, no, this is the value you're going to evaluate Apple Computer at. And lo and behold, you know, he was one of the few CEOs that would go to those audit calls by Wall Street and he would tell them essentially the valuation of, and look at Apple now, they're the biggest, most profitable organization in the world, right? And you know, you got some, and that's saying a lot for a lot of the players in that space. And as long as they keep their act together, but you see how that philosophical thing of having the story, regurgitating the story to the point where it's clean enough to where you, when you pitch at that bigger level, it's the same thing we need to say to the mind of people of color. Get your act together. Get your story together. Get those jobs. Those menial jobs. Do those tasks. Because those strings will all, one day will come together and you'll be able to pull on it. And that journey will be that journey. You Absolutely. Will get to where you want to go.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Man, this is dynamite as always. The energy as always. The right people are going to value this. I don't worry about who doesn't. I never do. Someone asked me, hey, I was on one of the episodes, one of my other guests, and did you get any feedback yet? I said, you know what? I really don't care about the feedback in general. It's just, we know what we're saying and we know what's behind it and we know what the value is. And I've learned if someone doesn't value it, then they don't value it. I value it. No, I listen to what all my guests are saying and I'm going to embrace it. And I know what it's going to do for me. I already know because when you've been around this long, you recognize a proven word when you hear it. And instead of going around and testing things. So I'm happy. I'm thankful for people like you coming on the show. Thank you very much for coming on today, Spencer.
You're welcome.
I'm going to close with a thought. Thank and I'm going to give me. you Oh, sorry. Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, yes. I'm going to close with my closing leadership thought for today with regard to the topics, and then we're going to give you a closing thought, and we're going to sign off. And my closing thought is this, and this is something that I it popped up as a Facebook memory, and I'm like, I need to put this on one of my graphics because people like to collect those, so I'll put it on one of my graphics. But it goes like this. Being a good leader includes the ability to see someone's potential and cultivate them. And you made me think about this when you talked about the book, Build. That's what, for those of you out there that are leaders, you have to recognize somebody's potential and then cultivate that. It's everybody shouldn't have to bring the world to the table. They got to bring something. Bring me some clay. That's all I want you to bring me. I've actually told people that. Well, what can I do as an entry-level person? What can I do, Darren, to bring value to your organization? I said, you can bring passion, curiosity, a willingness to learn, and humility. And then I would always say, and you'll notice that I said nothing about Figma or wireframes or anything like that. If you bring me that as an entry-level person, everything else will take care of itself. And I would like you to be as emotionally intelligent as possible, but that's something that can be developed as well. But if you bring me those four things, we can do something. And I mentor people all over the world, and the people I mentor, I make sure they have those four things. And that's the first time anybody's heard me say that. If they don't have those four things, I can't help them.
Yeah,
I can't help them. Because I know you can't get blood from a turnip. As the older people would say down south all the time, you can't get blood from a turnip. And I recognize if somebody's a turnip, I don't try to get blood from them. I'm going to spare myself that headache. So bring me those things. I want to recognize, I know you have that. You'll have the ability. You'll have the potential. And then I will start to give you what you need. And then because you have those qualities, you'll embrace the things that we're giving you and you'll grow. And you'll ascend. And I've seen people, some people I've talked to have become directors. Some people I've talked to have turned around and gone to MIT to get more UX education. So the people who listen to me, long track record of success. And that makes me feel good because I see them having success. So that's my closing 2 cents. How about you, sir, today?
Well, you know, Danny, like I said, it's always tough following you because you just so elegantly always put things together in your phrases. And I'm like, you know, the close for me is just on top of what you stated, which is so true. It's just curiosity. You know, just be curious enough about what you're doing and bring that passion. Those would be the only two things I would add to what you stated, because I think without that, you have nothing. You know, you're either curious about the world you live in and you care enough about where you live, because, you know, it's what I think the saying was that some people say, well, if I make the bed, when I get out of the bed, why am I doing it on a repetition? Because it's a trained behavior. It's you learn these things as you grow up. Your mom would chastise you when you got up in the morning. You were the slob or your room was a mess. Make that bed. Because what she was bequeathing to you was trained attitudes lead to bigger and better things in life. You know, and it's like if you ever watch a child walk, you know, it's funny how they put the one step in front of the other end, and pretty soon they're motoring around, right? And then they're getting into stuff. Now you got another set of problems. They're getting into stuff. They're following you, and they're going out the door when the door closes, or you think the door's closed, and you don't close them outside. They're behind you. You don't lock them outside. But no, I mean, that's the reality of all of this. It's just the curiosity and just having the wherewithal just to want to do it. And I agree. Bring me the clay. But the clay has to have some intellectual level at some minimum level. The rest, you know, the rest you can move on. But so I appreciate you having me on, man. Darren, it's always been a rip to just kind of just chop things up with you about different ways. And you know, sometimes I get a little long in areas because it's just so many thoughts.
That's okay. It's gold.
that ramble in my head that you just want to get out there because you just keep putting it together in the conversation, and hopefully that communication comes across.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you be as long as you want to be, man. It's it's good stuff. It's good stuff. I've got a long attention span, and I encourage other people to do the same. So, yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. And tell Ayanna we said hello. I thought she was going to end up tagging along, but let's see if she pops
in. No, I don't drag her with me all the time. I'll reach out. Oh, Dad, I want to be in that one, too. I said, okay, you got to go ask Darren if you can be in that one.
That would have been fine. But we're going to sign off here. Always love the discussion. Again, love the energy. And we're thankful for those of you who have taken the time to tune in and listen to the podcast. Hey, share the podcast with your friends, folks. It's time for truth to go viral. I'm going to continue saying that. I should get a t-shirt that says that made. I know how to do that too. But we'll get that going. But that is it for today. That's all the time we have. So until next time, this is Darren Hood, the host of The World of UX. As always, wishing you the absolute best. Happy UXing, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.